Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Dr. Erkut Sogut, sports agent and sports lawyer.
Okay, what is the most popular misconception that football fans have about a football agent?
I mean, that's what is in the news, I would say, what they read about agents. Yeah. And generally, there is a bad image regarding agents because they get so much money from the clubs. Mm-hmm. That's what they think, and that they're greedy. And I wouldn't say it's the agents which should be blamed for everything. I'm saying, like in every profession, there are good ones and bad ones.
Yeah.
There are good agents, bad agents, like good lawyers, bad lawyers. And the same as with the agents, it's nothing different. And but it's obviously it's easy to blame the agents because the agents don't have like a kind of a community that can back them and help them in the media and everywhere else. So they're just literally more alone by themselves. And for the clubs, it's easier to blame someone, and it's the agents when they pay a lot of money. They don't have to pay sometimes that much money, especially on the club side, that people don't know that a lot of agents act on behalf of the clubs. So I'll just give you an example. I'm going to make a deal. I'm representing a player. Suddenly, from the other side, there are two agents coming up and saying, we are representing that club. And I'm saying, why that club needs now two other agents involved to pay agency fee if I'm the agent of the player and they just have to pay me. So it's suddenly they're paying three agents and that's a lot of money. And then in the end, if the club's paying so much money to agents, they say, oh, hey, the agents are the bad guys. No, sometimes they put agents into the game.
Yeah. So, yeah. Do you think that, so in that particular example and in that case, do you think that although we've seen an increase in regulation over the years, do you think it still needs to be more closely regulated?
Yeah. I mean, at the moment, there's no really a regulation to become an agent.
You have to pass a FIFA test, right?
No, you don't have to.
You don't have to do that. It's a voluntary thing.
Yeah. It's not. I mean, in the past, it was all controlled by FIFA and there were an exam which was done in the football federations wherever you were living.
Yeah.
And there's no exam since 2015.
Okay.
At the moment, you just go online today. You just register yourself and you're an intermediary, they call us right now.
Right.
And you can start working. So literally, you pay a fee, which is like £400 or £500. And that's it. You're a registered intermediary or an agent and you can represent tomorrow of a football player. So to work as an agent is like, or to start working is very simple and easy. There's no regulations at all. I mean, this is a danger for the players and for the family members. They got represented by people who has no clue about the business or hasn't learned anything.
So as a responsible agent with some big clients, some of the biggest clients in the world, how do you feel about the lack of regulation in that way? It's frustrating for you, presumably.
Yeah, definitely. I'm always fighting for more education in that area. And that's why I'm also in the FIFA workshop. I'm working with the guys together to change the regulations. And the first thing I brought up was really we need like kind of an education program for agents, because these people, they're representing football players, which their careers is so like limited.
Yeah.
7-8 years average, maybe 10-15.
Yeah.
So these people need to be have some education and background knowledge to represent these players. It can't be so easy, because you can destroy the life of a football player so easily.
Yeah. How did you first become an agent? I mean, some of your clients and people will know Mesut Ozil, İlkay Gündoğan.
Yeah, I mean, so representing Mesut Ozil for a long time, İlkay's agent is his uncle, Ilan. Yeah. He works with us in a group.
Okay, so you're part of the same company.
So,
okay, yeah.
So what we did literally was we brought people together where family members were representing football players and trying to create a community and called it Family in Football.
Yeah.
So the agents of these players are working with me together, so I don't represent them on myself. So we are like more a team of agents coming together and representing the players and helping each other. But players like İlkay Gündoğan, his uncle is, for example, the manager or the agent, but he's with us in the same umbrella of Family Football.
But you decided to embark upon that career because you had family friends who were football players and you wanted to make sure they got good representation.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So we felt, and a lot of family members of football players, they don't want to go into a big agency which represents 500, 600 players or 300 players. They always boost, but we have so much players.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a good environment for a player. You're just one of 600, like, especially for a young player. What can you expect there? Like, it's like, for me and the family members, they got excluded usually from the business. And I think the family members, they have the right to be more inside and to know what's really going on there behind the scenes. I mean, the parents are looking after the kids the whole time and the youth, bringing them to the training ground, washing literally the clothes of the boy, and looking after him like for everything. And suddenly when the boy is 17, 18, an agent comes around from the right and said, "Hey, I'm an agent. I do the deal. I got 10% commission. Goodbye."
Yeah.
So what's with the family members? So what? So they just left behind it usually. And I said that kind of management is not, like, in my opinion, the right way. And I said, we believe in something different. We believe that we have to bring these family members together. That's why we have these players under one umbrella with the family members. So we can help each other and we don't need to go into a big agency to get the same services and everything. So I think that's the future model.
And give people an idea of what you look after for the player. So it's not just the contractual negotiations for his playing contract. It will be what I think I've heard called a 360 deal, where you look after everything. So image rights and endorsements and everything like that. That's something that falls under your umbrella in total.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we can do, because we have not 500 players. We have less quality players, some talent. So that's, we have the time to take care of with everything.
Mm.
Otherwise, you can't do that. In an agency, we have hundreds of players. How will you take care like 360? Mm. It's literally impossible.
Mm.
You're just a number there. And I think what we're trying to do is give them really the comfort that they just focus on the pitch and we can do everything off the pitch. And that's kind of the goal. But there are always, I think, two different kinds of agents. There's some agents who are looking really after the player 360 and trying to give the best service with everything.
Mm.
And there's some agents, they just deal brokers. They just go break a deal, get the commission out. They might call the player 6 months later and say, "Hey, there's another opportunity for you. You might change a club. Would you earn more money?" The player might say yes. He breaks another deal, gets his commission and gone, and leaves the player for himself alone. I mean, it's what you want to do and how you're in the market.
And you would never like to work like that.
No, I mean, as an agent, I said, well, what I said in the beginning, you can represent players and you can represent clubs.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're on the club side, sometimes you're on the player side. So, and on the player side, the players we represent, we work with them 360. But I give you an example. Let's say I have a friend who's an agent in Germany.
Mm.
He calls me and says, "Hi, I represent this player. He plays, for example, for Borussia Dortmund, and we think he's good for the Premier League." And then he asked me, "Hey, Erkut, can you check the Premier League if he could be, if there's a club looking for that kind of player?" And then I start looking and trying to help them. So we broke a deal, we share commission, and I'm out. I'm not looking after the player 360 because he has an agent who looks, but I'm helping to break the deal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way to act in that business. You don't have a lot of players. You don't need to have a lot of players. You need to be smart and see what you can do and follow the market.
Mm. And what do you make of when we started this chat, we talked a bit about misconceptions of agents in the media. And one of the most common ones I certainly hear is that an agent will purposely unsettle their player to force a move, to get commission on the transfer move. And I'm in the moment at the time of recording, we're in the middle of what's happening with Paul Pogba, for example. A lot of football fans would have the opinion that his agent unsettles players a lot to get moves to different clubs to get commission. Is that something you see happening in the industry that you're working in?
I mean, regarding that case, what you mentioned, yeah. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah.
I don't know the inside. That's why yeah. it's always better to say nothing if you don't know what's
sure.
going on there. It's just the media. What the media says, it's you don't know if you can believe it or not anyways. But generally, I mean, there might be agents who work like that. They yeah. just want to focus on the commission they'll get, the next step. But there might be agents who are really not working like that. As I said in the beginning, there are agents who really care about the player in first hand, want to make the make it for the players. And there are some agents who really think about themselves in first hand. Like, just an example, if I go and negotiate a deal for my client, mm-hmm. I'm not going to negotiate first my commission. Mm-hmm. But there are some agents who goes into the club and says, hey, I can bring you this player. How much is my commission? And they say, for example, 5%. He goes to the next club. Hey, I know you guys are interested. How much would you give to this player? How much is my commission? They would say 8%. So he would literally work on for himself first,
yeah.
find the club with the biggest commission for himself, and then go to the player and say, hey, you know what? That club is the best club
yeah.
for you.
Regardless
you
of know, whether that player is going to
exactly,
fit in there. Yeah.
Exactly. You can't work like that. That's a kind of, a lot of people do that, but you should definitely get the best options out for your player, mm. and then you will work for your own commission.
Am I right in saying that players and agents have a two-year deal at all times and it has to be renewed every 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, that's the general rule which FIFA gave out, and some federations have the same rule. But for example, and not many people know this, in Germany, that rule doesn't exist anymore. Since 2004, there was a court decision and two agents was claiming, hey, we were representing that player, but the player went with another agent to that club and signed a deal. And but the court decision was a player can use as many agents as he wants. He's an employee and he's protected to find a new job. So if yeah. that agent can't find him a job, another one can find him a job. So people still sign it for 2 years. But in Germany, for example, it doesn't make sense. Like, there's no exclusivity in Germany.
Mm.
But in other countries, like in England, there's still an exclusivity. If you sign a player for 2 years, he's 2 years with you.
It gets pretty complicated then, because if you, for example, you represent Mesut Özil, and presumably you did that representation deal in Germany with him when he first came through as a player, and now he plays in England. I mean, where's the jurisdiction line?
I mean, I did it here, the representation.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay, you did it here. So representation, no. So the jurisdiction is in England.
Yeah. No, but I'm just kidding. Like, I mean, so that's one of the biggest issues we have right now, because the regulations are in every country different right now. Like, wherever you go, for example, if I need to make a deal in Italy, or in France, I need to register myself there before I do the deal with the football federation, pay a fee, and then I can go on.
Mm.
So if I, for example, want to do a deal now in Turkey, but I'm not registered with the Turkish Football Federation, I can't do a deal in Turkey from a Turkish club to another Turkish club.
Right.
So I need to pass an exam first in Turkey to
right.
be able to do a deal within Turkey. But if I bring a player from Europe into Turkey,
yeah.
then they say, that's okay, you can do that.
There's a lot to remember.
Yeah, so I mean, there's so many, like, and then in France, if you want to become an agent today, you need to pass an exam. Which is not easy. Same in Italy now. They started with doing an exam, and I think 95% missed the couldn't pass the exam. It was like 1 or 2 months ago in Italy, and it's really a mess. And it needs to be controlled from one center.
Yeah,
regulations for all the countries. If I'm registered with the headquarters of FIFA as an agent, that should be enough to do deeds all over the world.
Yeah, or maybe there should be some kind of European Union type agreement.
Something like that.
Yeah. But that's going to be hard, right?
But if there's Brexit, I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. That's another layer of complication over the top.
Exactly.
But I think because certain leagues in certain countries are much more powerful or much more yeah. money laden, it would probably be difficult. I understand if you are in the middle of a negotiation with a player for a new contract or a transfer, your week would look very different. But what does an average week look like for you doing this job?
Oh, I mean,
a lot of traveling, presumably.
Yeah, I travel literally every week, once, sometimes twice, but once is very normal to travel around, usually in Europe, but also very often to America, because my main thing in my life is still teaching. I'm sitting here as a sports agent and sports lawyer, but that's what I love to do, and what my passion is teaching. That's why I have so many young students around me and interns in my office, and I'm teaching them how to become a football agent or how to become a sports lawyer. That's what I go to different universities all over the world to do. I was at Harvard Business and Law School, gave a guest lecture. I was last this year, I was in Washington, at George Washington. I went to LA to teach. So I'll go to Mumbai in September for 2 days to teaching. I'll go to Bogota and to Miami this year. So I have every month literally one or two teaching work to do. So, and which I love, which is my passion. I mean, through teaching, I came to my biggest clients today.
Yeah.
That opened me the door while I was teaching people.
So that's how you became an agent, really?
I mean, Mesut Özil is becoming my client because I was teaching, literally. You know, people ask me, how do you become the agent of Özil? And I said, look, I was teaching upcoming agents. I was teaching family members how to do contracts. I was helping them, telling them, here, if you do a boots deal, you should be careful about these things. If you do a contract, be careful about options and whatever. So I was trying, and I started like that. It was like more like 10 years ago in Germany and Turkey. And I was giving seminars over the weekend for people who are interested into that and wanted to learn more, wanted to be more educated. So family members of Mesut came to my seminar and then they contacted me afterwards and said, hey, would you mind to come to Germany and give some education to all our employees in the marketing company? So I said, yes, why not? Once a month, I went to Germany and gave them like some education. That became like once a week. And then later on, I said, hey, why don't you move to Germany, become now the lawyer of Mesut? Okay, why not? I do it. Then later on, hey, why not becoming his agent? So literally this teaching, my passion, which I love, brings me the clients in my life. So, and still that's what I'm following, is my teaching.
And we'll talk a bit more about Özil Tuğerk after the break, so stick around.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back to this Ramble Meets episode with Agent Erkut Sogut. Thank you very much again for being with us, Erkut. We mentioned a bit about Mesut Özil before the break, and he's clearly your most high-profile client. is it something that it becomes a whole new type of job when you've got a client who's a player who's so well known and so talented and in the press all the time? Does it become almost a whole new dimension to working because of that?
Yeah, I mean, with a player like Mesut and this the same level player, you have a lot more to do. And
yeah.
People don't realize that.
It's almost a full-time job just looking after him.
I mean, it's like looking after 20 standard Premier League players, like average Premier League players, which is like not that famous. That's like having one Mesut Ozil like on the side. That means you have much more press media work, which much more charity work, obviously. You got much more people asking, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? Especially on charity side, we got asked so many things and it's very difficult to say no. So you want to do everything. You want to help everywhere. So we just...
Does the club not lead on that though? The club he's at?
No, I mean, the club has his own charity where he's active too.
And he has to do media days at the club kind of stuff.
But on top, you have your own things. So,
sure.
I mean, we're operating since 2014, kids all over the world. And now for his wedding, he announced he will operate another 1,000 kids all over the world.
Right.
Which is like a big thing behind. Mm. So I need to work on that. We need to find the places. We need to find the doctors who are going abroad to operate. We do the big show together. On the other hand, we do a lot of giving food, like for poor people. We did like 16,000 people just 3 weeks ago in Turkey in all food centers. We're organizing that. I need to meet these people. I need to organize that. The money needs to be transferred. It needs to be followed up. So there's a lot of things going behind the scenes, like where you do or the box we have at the Emirates, for example. We have 15 seats, for example, there, which we can use. But every day Mesut says, like for every home game, hey, keep 5 seats for some kids with illness, like sickness there.
Right.
So we bring nearly every home game a family inside whose kids has some cancer or something like that. So we always, he said, because I think that's the family thing, is also from his mom, I think, what he got to say. You need to give back.
Sure.
He needs to say, she always says to him, like, and she has even a letter in his house written to his son and says, Mesut, you're not my son if you don't share what you have with others who are in need. So he has that kind of feeling, and that's what he gives us as a work always. Erkut, do this, do that. Find some projects, help people. And he
so you have to feel like you have to be a part of that as well.
Of course.
Is it hard for in among all this stuff going on, and we'll talk a bit about the media coverage of Mesut in a minute, is it hard to keep and maintain a focus on the football?
No, I wouldn't say so. No, I mean, he's totally focused on football as well. I mean, that's his main thing. And during the day, he wakes up, he goes to training, he comes back. They live literally football every day. That's their work. And it has nothing to do with focus or not. I mean, he's focused as it was before. People think, oh, he plays PlayStation. He's not focused anymore.
Yeah.
It's good for the media, you know, but he's not playing more PlayStation than the other players because there's no time to play more.
But if he was, would you step in and say, look?
Of course. Yeah. He wouldn't himself. He's not stupid. I mean, he played so much football in his career in different clubs. He achieved so many things. He knows when is the limit and when not. We don't need to go and tell him, hey, you do it too much or so. He's not that kind of person, like you have to say. They're like younger players, you have to maybe say when they're 18, 19. But Mesut is 30, you don't have to tell them like, hey, you know, you should be more careful about this or that, no.
So when you're able to broker the deal for Mesut, his current contract at Arsenal, where he's obviously paid very well and there's a lot was made of that, were you a bit surprised by how much negative coverage has come from the English press around the amount of money that Mesut is paid? Based on, you know, the contribution he's made, because he's clearly one of the best players in the world, right? There was a lot of negative coverage of that. Were you surprised by that?
I mean, why should be the negative coverage towards Mesut? I don't understand. It's an offer from the club, which the player and we accept and we sign.
Sure, so no, I understand your point of view.
Why do people blaming him now for earning that money, what the club offers him to get him?
Well, what do you
and
think?
The fans acting like they get the money from their pocket out every week and has to pay them going there to the Emirates and here, wow, we have to pay you. So, I mean...
Why do you think they think that?
I don't know. I mean, like for players like Mesut, you have to think as well, like not just on the pitch and off the pitch for the club as well. And I know like if it's from jersey sale worldwide, is it regarding commercial deals for the clubs? Players like Mesut bring a lot into the club. It's not just on the pitch. They make a lot of money out of players like Mesut. He
improves the brand worldwide, that kind of thing.
I mean, he reads on the social media. He has a bigger reach than the club.
Yeah.
Which is big. He has a bigger media than the club itself. So that means the club can use that as well. So, which is another way to make the club. And I think some people in England forget there are more Arsenal fans outside England.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Arsenal fans are not just the ones in England. Yeah. Why are the Arsenal fans outside England not treated the same way?
Mm.
Why not they listen to them one? Like in Asia, there are millions of Arsenal fans. In America, all over the world, they're like fan clubs. Mm. They're spending so much money for the club. They're coming to the game spending. So they're fans. They're maybe more diehard fans like. So, but they're not recognised, in my opinion, same like the fans over here. Like,
yeah, okay. So you think it's skewed towards England? Well, I suppose it's because Arsenal is based in England,
yeah,
so that's
but
why
still,
it's going to get a lot of coverage.
But football is global now, and you can't see it like as a fan just in England. You have to see it like as a global fan, because these fans are also members. They pay, they got season tickets, they come over here, they go shopping, everything. They're like fans, yeah, bring money to the club. That's a global thing.
Yeah.
That's why if you have players which have a global reach, it's good for the club.
Yeah, to me it feels a bit like... That fans of Arsenal particularly are currently a little bit upset about the direction of the club and about the club perhaps being a bit left behind by Man City and Liverpool, and they were promised these things about the stadiums being paid for now, so now we can borrow these players. And they feel, like I said, they feel a bit left behind, and maybe it feels to me that because Mesut is the best paid player at the club, he's the fall guy, because people need to direct their anger somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think the big players, the World Cup winning players, probably take a lot more of the criticism.
Yeah, but you have to see always, I think, this is like there are 11 players on the pitch in the end.
Of course. Yeah, I'm not, I don't think it's fair for me to ask you a lot of questions about Mesut Ozil, and because you don't have to speak for him.
Yeah,
I'm sure
yeah.
he'd be happy to speak for himself, and I'm sure he does, you know, put his all into everything. Yeah, clearly it's unfortunate that the criticism he's got. I mean, to me, you mentioned earlier a bit about the charity work he does and everything he puts into back into the community, the money he earns. I wonder if more can be done to shout about that a bit more, to make it clearer that he is doing these things. Or do you feel like you should need to do that?
This is not good news. You know what I mean? Good news or bad news?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so it's not something the papers are interested in.
Yeah, I just give you an example. Like we were... Yeah, of course they're not. We just give you an example. We just started a campaign called Your Story, Our Voices. I don't know if you heard about that.
No.
So one day we were sitting like a couple of weeks ago and I said, look, I have this reach over 80 million on my social media. Why are we using this just for commercial stuff or private stuff? Can't we do something else with it? And then I said, what do you think? What do you think with what can we do? I said, I don't know. Maybe we have to open it up. Open it up to people. They can use it. Like they need to bring their voice out, like to say what problems they have, the which the mainstream media would never say about or would never do about. Why I have our own media, let's bring it out to the people and say, okay, then we sit back and thought, okay, let's try to use it. How? And then we came to the idea, okay, it's your story, it's our voices.
Mm-hmm.
That means someone who suffered from discrimination, racism, mental health, especially, and a lot of other things, can write Mesut an email with the story, with the video, and he will post it on his social media, which he did like 3 days ago with a girl. She tried to kill herself twice. She lives in Canada. She has Indian Punjabi background, and she's had so many mental health problems. And she came out with that story and shared it with us. And Mezo put it on his social media on every platform.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it was in any media?
No. I've not heard of it.
Yeah, yeah. For example, because that's not, but. If there would be like he played 3 hours PlayStation, then it would be in the media.
Yeah.
It would be all around. And if there would be bad quotation, it would be there. There were so many positive things about people all over the world writing us, contacting us, saying like, thanks for doing that. No any athlete in the world has ever done that. Mm. Giving his social media to the people and telling, hey, bring your voice out. Send me your story and I will post it.
Mm.
And which is like unique. But this is something different, you know. Obviously, it's nowhere in the media because they don't care about that.
Well, something that was in the media, and this will be my last question on Mesut, I promise.
Yeah.
Something that was in the media was...
I should have bring him with me.
Yeah, no, yeah.
You can ask him yourself.
That'd have been great.
Next time, I'll ask him.
Yeah, the something that certainly was in the media, Erkut, was Mesut not wanting to play anymore for the German national team. And the quote I read, which purportedly from him, is, I am German when we win, I am an immigrant when we lose. And this, of course, was centered around his meeting with the Turkish president. What do you make of that? And was that something? Was that a decision that you were included in, and something you decided was best for Meza, or was it something that came from him and you'd said, okay, we'll work with this the best we can?
I mean, this can be never our decision, like that he leaves the German national team. Sure. Were you involved in the process? Of course, we were involved and helping him to in this process, but the decision that he doesn't want to play anymore for Germany, it's his own decision.
Sure.
So because we said to him, you know, we were even like, we tell him like, you know, think about it, take your time, go to holiday. You don't have to decide anything now. You're emotional. And once he came back, he said, guys, like, I don't feel it anymore.
I think that's fair enough. I appreciate you answering that, honestly. Back to kind of your job, do you find some of your clients or some of the clients within family and football are affected by negative criticism when they're, whether it's their performances or their actions? Does it affect them as players? And is it something sometimes you have to talk to them about?
Yeah, I mean, mentally, mental issues is getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Which I realize.
And we're talking about them
more,
aren't
we? You need to be a mentor. You need to be talking, especially with young people. Mm. So I think a lot of the football players, the young ones, they're top talent, also the old one. I mean, but the brain is so important. I think the mental issues is so important to be showing what you can do on the pitch. Mm. If you got distraction from family, other stuff, and you can't, you're not 100% concentrated at the weekend, you can't deliver. Mm. It doesn't matter how good you actually are, how good your legs are and everything. But if you're mentally, if you don't have the 100% confidence, 100% belief in yourself, if you doubt yourself, for example, you can forget it. Hmm. So you really need to work with players today. And I think the club started, and also Arsenal, they have nowadays people inside the clubs. Like, I think every club must have it.
A psychologist.
A psychologist.
Do you offer mental health support as part of your agency?
Yeah, I mean, if we can't do something, you have to do it externally. Mm-hmm. I'm not an expert in mental health, right? So I will never start acting like a specialist.
No.
What we do is like more motivation. Mm. What we can do. But if I feel they need something more than motivation, then we have to call someone and talk about that and make a meeting. And really the player has to sit with someone from outside who is an expert and it can help him. And it's not a shame to do that. You have to do that. You have to help the players. You can't say, you can't hide it. Like,
what are the sort of good and bad things about your job? What do you think? We mentioned at the top of this about the idea that this needs to be better regulated, that you need to have better people. I presume you'd like to see better, more professional people in the industry. But what are currently the good things about the job? What does an agent do that's really important for a player?
I mean,
it's just a support network, really, is it? A glory, a sort of kind of support network for everything they need that doesn't involve playing on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing being an agent, it's different, difficult to answer. It's like, I would say you do every day a different thing. Mm. No other day is like the same day. Like it changes every day. And things happen sometimes very quickly. You need to respond quick. You have always different tasks and you have always challenging things. It's not like you go to work at 9 o'clock in the morning, get out at 5 or 6 and then the next day and the weekend is off. You don't have it. You literally have every day.
No one has that in football, do they? You have to work the weekend.
Yeah, you have to literally Saturday, Sunday, you watch games, you meet parents, you meet players, you meet brands, you meet clubs. It's like every day something is going on. And it's not easy with family and stuff. I mean, I'm married and I have a son. Mm. I feel it sometimes as really difficult.
Sure.
And he's now 2 years old. Mm-hmm. That's, if I travel, I'm not there around. So that's the only issue we have. I think it's difficult. But I mean, it's exciting because you don't know what happened tomorrow. That's really something I love. I don't like this way of life where every day is the same day. Mm. I like to be like, I don't know where I will be next week and I will travel and I meet again people and then explore. And I say, whoever goes away and see things gets more wiser in life. And I think that's important. Like, and I feel it when I go to different countries, different cultures. I was just in China 1 month ago for 5 days. And then I was in Italy last week for 3 days in Torino and Milano. I was like, I'm traveling and I'm meeting people and different cultures, and makes it so exciting to learn about different cultures and different languages.
And what about the bad things? What are the drawbacks to that? It's just the lifestyle is very busy and it's difficult, or is it hard to fight the press or speak to clubs, and some clubs are very difficult to deal with? What are the sort of downsides to the job you do?
I mean, you have to deal with people in the end.
Yeah.
And there will be difficult people sometimes to deal with within the club or outside the club. And same like in the media, there are people you can deal nicely with and there are some you can't deal with.
Which one am I, Erkut?
Huh?
Which one am I?
At the moment, good one.
Thank you very much.
I can't change any moment.
Okay, yeah. And one question I really wanted to ask you, when I found out we were doing this, is the idea that you have a big responsibility to young teenage kids. So when you first get involved with football players, they're young. I know officially you can't be involved with them until they're a certain age, but the real world is perhaps a bit different. I'm not suggesting you do that, but clearly we all know in football that parents are spoken to, things happen. Would you like to see tighter regulation around that in particular, but also how important is the role of looking after really young teenage kids when they're about to embark on their career, and what kind of advice do you offer them?
I mean, my biggest advice is focus on school.
Sure. Okay.
Number one, I always say to them, like, if you're high school age, I mean, it's always possible to do both together.
Mm.
Some parents ask me, oh, should he focus no more in school or focus more in football? He's now 15, 16, 17, 18, whatever. And I say, look, he can do both if he's smart enough.
Mm.
And if you work hard enough, he can go to school, do his A-levels and play football in a good academy. Everything is possible if you really want to do it.
Like, are the clubs more responsible about education for kids now?
Yeah, I think it's changing. I think a lot of clubs, in Germany, I can say it's very good.
Yeah.
It's the system is fantastic with education. The clubs really take care of the kids' school and education.
Do you think that's why they develop more players?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely, yeah. Definitely. And now I think in England, it's changing towards it as well. And I think the clubs are really taking care of that as well. And it's changing. And I think if I see the difference between German and English clubs in the youth, especially, the coaches are fantastic in Germany.
Mm.
I mean, that's what they're lacking here in England, I think, good youth coaches. But I think it's coming now.
Mm.
I can feel it. I'm living here last 6-7 years now.
Mm.
When I was coming, the first time when I was in England, they had some amazing pitches built up, new ones. And I'm looking, who's the coach?
Mm.
Not really a good one.
Right.
And I'm going to Germany. The pitches might not be the best ones now, like we have in England.
Yeah.
But the coaches are really, really good educated. Like if you go to the under-19 coach of Schalke, it's Norbert Elgert. I don't know if you ever heard of him. I mean, he is the best coach in Germany.
Mm.
Put them all together, even the first team coaches. Mm. In my eyes, he's number one. He even won the award for the best coach in Germany.
Right.
Between all of them. He doesn't want to go and train the first team. He could easily, but he loves coaching young talent.
Yeah.
And all these big talents today, I mean, half of the German national team went through his hands.
Mm.
Yeah, if it's Draxler, if it's Leroy Sané, if it's Mesut Özil, Manuel Neuer, Hövedes, Kolasinac, name it. I can Thilo Kehrer. And I think there's so many football players who went through his hands because they take care of this part of education. I think England is coming now and have great youth academies. And I think that's the future for them.
And I suppose in England, sometimes it feels like coaches who coach academy, they want to at some point become first team coaches and they don't take it seriously. But that, when you think about it, you're absolutely right, because those formative years of those young kids, that's when they learn the most. Their brains are like sponges, right? Yeah. So it's really important.
Yeah.
I think we've got a good crop of young players in England now coming through, but I think we can't be too complacent about it. We've got to stay on it. What there'll be plenty of people listening to this who are quite a bit younger than us and think, do you know what, I'm perhaps not good enough to be a football player, but I'd quite like to work in football and be an agent. What advice would you give them?
I mean, I was in the same kind of in the same kind of situation. I was playing in a youth academy in Germany. I was in Hanover. I'm born, raised in Hanover.
Okay.
And for my father, it was always clear, you will become a lawyer or a doctor. I said, I want to become a teacher. Like, that was my thing. I want to become a football player or a teacher. And he said, no, lawyer or doctor. And I said, okay, he wants me to become lawyer or doctor. So he never could have education because he didn't have the money in Turkey back then to go to school. So my grandfather couldn't send him to school. He needed to work on the field. So my father's dream was his son needs to become a lawyer or a doctor. At least we need to be educated. And I said, oh, but I'm really good in football. You know, I want to become a football player. And he said, no, no, no. He never came and watched one single game of mine.
Really?
Not even once. He said, no, you have to go. So in the end, I might not be 100% good enough to become a football player.
Yeah.
But then I decided to study, go to university. And I studied law because of my father, but I found a middle way. I said, okay, I can study law, do my master's, I do my doctor in law, so I can start teaching at university instead of teaching at school. So I'm still a teacher, but on university level, but I'm a lawyer.
Yeah.
And my father's happy, the son is a lawyer, and I'm happy, I'm a teacher at university. That's what I did in the end.
Okay.
And I started focusing on sports while I was studying.
Mm.
I started very early doing interns in football agencies. That's what I would tell the young kids right now outside there. When you study, start early, getting interns, read about sports law, sports management, try to get into it as early as possible so you can educate yourself. And then later on, you might become a sports lawyer, you might become a sports agent, or you can work in a football club. There's so many opportunities there.
Yeah.
So they have to start early with that. So and they can be very successful and they can still work in football or in any other sports.
Or indeed, they could perhaps buy your book as well.
Yeah, they can buy my book as well.
What's the name of it? Tell us the name.
How to Become a Football Agent.
Well, there you go. That's all you need. That's the Bible.
Yeah, it's the second edition. It's coming out now. I mean, it's literally next week. You can buy it. You can pre-order it already now. But we had the first edition. It was fantastic last year. And that we decided to do a second edition with more contract examples in the back. So people can see how does a contract look like between a player and an agent? How a contract looks like between the player and the club? Or how a mandate looks like. Another agent gives another agent a mandate to take care of his player in another country and try to find him a deal. So I wanted to give more. And also I put in a lot of different agents who are telling their experiences.
Great.
So the biggest agent in Australia and New Zealand, Paddy Dominguez, he writes about how is it being an agent there. There's an agent from South Korea explaining how is it being a football agent there. There's an agent from the MLS. There's an agent from South America and France, which is Mathieu. He is the agent of Ospina. Yeah, so he tells about being an agent in Colombia and these countries. So I gave like trying to give them a view of different agents, telling a story. And in that package, if someone reads about that, he will understand, oh, how can I become a football agent? It's kind of the first step and first intro because there's nothing outside there to read.
It's an absolutely fascinating story. The book is great. Please go out and buy a copy of it. I'll put a link on it on the synopsis and in the social media. Okay, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me. It was really nice. Thank you.
This was a Radio Staccato production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.